I'm Duncan MacLeod. This is a special edition of Talk Central recorded on Thursday, 8 December 2016. Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism. So I sat down on Thursday at the campus in Bryanston with Internet Solutions MD Saki Masaikos to find out why his company is buying MWeb and getting into the retail ISP market, especially in light of the fact that it seems to depart from IS's historical focus on business customers. I asked Saki about whether this represents a bigger retail play for Internet Solutions in the future and how, or indeed if, IS plans to integrate MWeb into its business. I also asked him about the ICT policy white paper and what it means for IS and for the industry more broadly. I hope you enjoy the interview. Great. Well, Saki, thanks for joining me in this interview this morning. I know that Internet Solutions has dabbled in the consumer market off and on over the years with brands like Plug and Icon, but you've never had a full go at the retail space. You're now buying MWeb and it's 325,000 customers. That's clearly going to change now. Why did you do the deal?
Yeah, I mean, great that you picked up, and thanks for the opportunity to be on your show. I mean, I think you're 100% right. I mean, we've had a very interesting history around our consumer part of our business. I mean, fundamentally though, from the start, I mean, and the founders of IS were very pioneering in terms of bringing the internet, you know, firstly to the enterprise in South Africa. They were really, you know, kind of one of the first, and fundamentally they believed in a connected world. They believed in a very early stage, and I think kind of, you know, very forward thinking in terms of their view that the internet could change the world and I think it's proven itself. They came obviously from a very technical perspective. I mean, if you know some of the founders, they were, you know, kind of very engineering computer scientists at heart. But they really believed that the internet should be as pervasive and to as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Started very focused on the enterprise space, and you're 100% right. I mean, the beginnings of IS was, let's be very, very focused. Let's take this thing to the enterprise. Quite early on, though, they realized, and for different reasons at the time, in those days, it was kind of saying, well, you know, we've got this bandwidth during the evening, you know, which is just sitting there. You know, why don't we offer it to, you know, in other words, your shared costs could be distributed across the base. And there was a need for getting out to the markets. And we launched something called Icon, which even at that stage kind of blew all our expectations in terms of the growth. I mean, there was this pent-up demand of people starting to understand the internet, having access. But it was very crude. I mean, if you remember those old, you know, modem days, which were, you know, 9.6, we got excited when we got to, to kind of, you know,
50K.
It was incredible. But we did an incredible job in terms of actually getting out there. But what we realized is that if you don't control, I mean, at a commercial level, even though we still had aspirations to make sure that it was a connected world, if you don't control, the quality and the last mile, it was very, very, very difficult to offer a unique proposition in the marketplace. And we got it to a certain size, and we realized, you know, let's pull back. And we did a deal at that stage with Vodacom, as you probably are aware. And it's amazing where it's at, because it's actually come back full circle back to us now. It's a couple of things that we're seeing in the industry. First and foremost, right now, we still believe in the connected world. You know, we're seeing that. We're seeing we're still quite distraught that in South Africa, with all the tech that we've got and all the regulatory framework that we have, there's still a large part of the community that's not connected. You know, and we realize we still have got a responsibility to a very connected world. At every single LSM, every single part of the world, part of South Africa and Africa, and we want to be part of that journey. And we started that actually 8 years ago. We started that with something called Always On, and it's been a fantastic vehicle for us. Now, that is a consumer play.
Yes.
You know, there's no question. And the reason why it's something we believed in, first and foremost, it's still the lowest cost into the markets. If you kind of think Wi-Fi, why? Because it's unregulated. All right. The heart of the internet has always been driven by a community, global community, who kind of say, let's get this thing out as pervasive as well, not really controlled by the regulators and by monopolies and by, you know, and Wi-Fi represents exactly that for us. It's unlicensed. All right. It's developed and taken to market by technical people at heart, and you can control the last mile. When I'm saying by control, and that's the commercial part of it.
Yeah.
You know, you know, DSL, you just can't. You know, prior to that, even on the dial-up side, it was, you know, 99% of it, the value went to the monopoly. And Wi-Fi, we said, well, hold on. You know, we can roll out our own environment. We don't have to go through the regulator. We can still live to our purpose of getting the internet to as many people as possible at the lowest cost, at the lowest cost entry. And as you know, always on footprint now. I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, I'm talking about hotspots, and is it, you know, how you define hotspots, you know. But, you know, I've got 2,400 hotspots. I mean, in terms of APs, you know, probably over 15,000 APs out in the marketplace. So we regard like Eastgate as one hotspot, even though we've got 1,000, you know, 1,000 APs in the environment. And we saw, you know, we just saw this absolute, I mean, the volumes and the hunger around people accessing it. Students, all right, coffee shops, people that were just, you know, so the first half an hour is normally free, or, you know, first hour, it's just tremendous amount there. And even frustrated, because, I mean, I'll be, you know, sometimes it's, you know, we can't, you know, we throttle a little bit, because, but there's just this pent up demand. Students mostly, I mean, students. At varsity that need access to the information, they can't afford it in this country.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. They can't afford it. So we said, you know, the timing's right. Why is the timing right at a commercial level? Those parameters, by the way, in terms of, you know, bandwidth that you've got idle, are not as much as play right now, because 24 hours, our capacity is pretty much weak. But what we did see changing is that firstly what Wi-Fi represented, and then secondly, the fact that now it's not only DSL. There's fiber. A lot of it is not regulated. When I say regulated, it's open access. You buy it at a wholesale level. There's many players out there, you know, at different tiers of quality and capacity. And, you know, I think a lot of them will make it, but some of them won't make it. There's a lot happening in the wireless, on the wireless side now, both, you know, fixed LTE and, you know, wholesale to a degree. There's things happening at the MVNO and the MVNO level. And then true to that promise of the connected world, in other words, for us, what we've seen from a lot of our users on Always On is, and we did a survey with them, and it kind of, you know, started with that. We did a survey with them saying, guys, come back to us and tell us where you want more hotspots, all right? And, you know, the rationale behind it was, let's just hear, you know, we thought it was going to be, you know, my shopping center down the road, my park down the road, please. My, you know, my hairdresser. I want it in my, and we got a lot of that.
Yeah.
But 50% of the users, and we had a massive sample, said, please bring Always On into my home. All right. And for us, it was, wow, you know what I'm saying? And this connected world of, I work in the office, I'm in transport, I'm in my clients who sometimes are SMEs. All right. And I'm at home. All right. For us, we thought that was a great vehicle for us. And again, that journey started for us as we learned from Always On, in terms of saying, well, hold on, you know, we've done something with Plug, which is more targeted. Even though it was the high end, a VIP client with the LSM, we saw what was happening at the SME level in terms of this pent up demand. And we thought, you know, it's a great thing. And enough, it was my predecessor, Derek Wilcox, he said, we've got to have an SME offering, but it's got to be a very, very different business to what we do for the enterprise. The way we service them, the way we market to them, the way we build products for them, very, very different. And we hired a consultant coming out of the, you know, PwC world, who developed a great model for us. And we launched Ignite, and then we bought the MWeb business part of, you know, from NASPACE. And our SME, I mean, again, there, I mean, it's such a neglected market in this country. You know, everybody goes after the enterprise. You know, today we're sitting with over 18,500 SMEs on our Ignite platform, and we've created a community. You know, a community where they not only buy connectivity, but they buy from each other, and then some of their platforms are integrated into our platform. Our biggest partner, and just to happen, he was calling me now, is Sage. You know, so you can get Pastel online, you can get Brilliant online. You can get the whole Sage offering as a because most SMEs want accounting packages, they want payroll, they want so forth.
Yeah.
And we're adding a lot more to that particular community. And we always follow that last piece. While now we can control, you know, the last mile, because it's not only copper and controlled by one entity, now you've got the flexibility to say, I can give much better quality, I can control that quality, and if I don't like it who I'm buying it from, I can kick them off and actually go and utilize someone else. And then we've got a great partnership with NASPACE. I mean, we've got a joint offering in VAST, a joint partnership in VAST. They've been absolutely superb partners of ours. And when, you know, when we started discussing even 3 years ago, we always felt, you know, when we're ready for it and when the market and dynamics have changed, that's something very, very, very important to us. And we'd like to take, you know, some of those high quality products that we've developed even in the enterprise and that, in terms of offering it to the consumer. Because again, you know, the consumer, all right, wants to go to market with, you know, also accessing, you know, the, you know, accessing work. It's not only the entertainment, accessing work. They want high end products. They don't initially want just the, you know what I mean, the you know, the off the shelf. So for us, integrating the investments we make in our network and sharing it across those different segments is important. And then also on our product sets that we develop, sharing it across those different sets with different delivery and operating models, you know, quite automated,
yeah,
quite self-service in terms of the way they go about it. And then offering, you know, hopefully over a period of time, you know, you know, a much broader suite of services to the consumer. So we're very excited about it. You know, the,
okay,
a lot of people felt, you know, that, you know, the consumers are, you know, difficult, you know,
yeah,
you know, and I think the great part for the journey that we've been on, Duncan, is that the consumer now is a lot more empowered, but also more important, quite techie away.
Mm.
And the reason for it is because the connectivity has become a lot more intuitive.
Mm.
So in the past, it was like, go buy a modem, install it, and then I'm lost, all right? I mean, just think of, you know, our parents, all right? It was like, it's a difficult journey. Today, you know, with Wi-Fi and connectivity and how intuitive it is, I mean, literally with one click, people are being connected. You know, self-service is now, you know, the mantra.
Mm.
Self-service from the community is also, you know, kind of big. And we thought that was a great time right now to you know, on the promise of this connected world and getting a lot more people, you know, onto this journey. We thought part of it was responsibility, but we're going to have a lot of fun with it. I mean, we're very excited about where we're going with this.
You're taking on a big organization here, and obviously an acquisition of this size is going to bring its challenges. Just in terms of, and I'm sure you've done a lot of thought around, yeah, thinking around this already, in terms of the cultures of the two organizations, how much work is actually going to have to be done from an integration perspective? Do you continue to run MWeb as a separate entity with its own structures, or do you move quickly to integrate that into Internet Solutions? What's your thinking around all of that?
Yeah, I mean there's a lot we can't say, but there's
sure,
certainly certain of the things that we've learned a lot over the last 10 years.
Mm.
One is, you know, in the past from an IS perspective, it was always if it were not invented yet, it's not good enough. And
sure,
I think we've realized that there are great people in this country, great people on the African continent that are smarter than us. Sometimes doing a lot better things for us. When we launched Plug, for instance, it was like, you know, we can do it ourselves. We can all integrate it. And what we realized as we've been a little bit more acquisitive, and I mentioned that our board has been very kind to us in terms of, you know, the value we can provide. We bought a fantastic business in Kenya called Access Kenya, and every day we're learning from them. I mean, they've been an absolutely superb partner of ours, you know, going forward. Is we've realized that in certain areas, all right, don't invent it yourself, and when, if you don't invent it yourself and you bring an external, you don't have to integrate into your environment.
Mm-hmm.
And the best example of that for us has been Ignite.
Right.
So Ignite, in terms of servicing that SME market, right, we didn't try and integrate into our business. We run it as a separate entity, right? We do share a lot, and mostly it's the network. I mean, because, you know, that's where the scale really comes into
yeah,
environment. You know, you roll out your network, your POP, at different tiers in terms of from layer one all the way to layer three. You know, that's ridiculous to roll out. It's like, you know, in your pavement in front of your road, five different fiber providers to get up. There's no use for that. It needs to be one, and we'll come back to that, I'm sure, a little bit later, because I think it's part of the ICT paper. But, you know, for us, we're saying, you know, build it once, and you can service so many different communities. So the business will be run separately. That's not our intention, is to keep it very separate, to hopefully learn from all the good work that we've done.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing it for 15 years. They know how to do this. They know how to build it. Hopefully we can bring in some of our learnings and our expertise, but we don't understand the consumer as well as they do. So for us, it's very much to keep it as a standalone business. I mean, there are opportunities in terms of what we've done in some of our other brands in both the content delivery side as well as the Wi-Fi, different access media, in terms of that. But it will be run. It will be run very, very separately. I think the worst thing we could do is actually bring it in and kind of integrate it into our entire areas. So from a call center perspective, a go-to-market, a marketing, all right, we absolutely want to leverage what they've got and hopefully enhance. Hopefully we can help, you know what I mean, and make it better. And that is our intention. Otherwise, we we wouldn't have done it, and we're very excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, what have your learnings been from the? I mean, it's not the first deal you've done with NASPERS. You bought MWare Business. I think it was in 2014 now.
Correct. Yeah.
I know that SYNAC has been working with. Obviously, an IS subsidiary has been working with MWare on the email.
Yeah.
Platforms.
Correct.
From that perspective, from that deal that was done 2 years ago, what have your learnings been from that? And
well, again, I mean, I think very, very much on the same thing. Firstly, there's some really good people out there that are smart with you, and they've got the scars as well. I mean, they've burnt and got to a point for good reason in terms of where they're at. You know, I think for me, it's making sure we keep that talent. That's the first part. I mean, the learnings. You know, fortunately, unfortunately, some people say it's a great thing. I mean, we are of a certain size right now.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, when you become big and, you know, bureaucracy and, you know, process and things like that come in. And what we've always tried to do is kill process. You know what I mean? You know, when you get to a certain size, you think, oh, there's a problem here, add a process. And then you add another process to monitor that process. And then with something, you take 5 minutes, now it takes 4 days.
Yeah.
Right? For us, it's always making sure we're removing, you know, process. And for us, as I said, to kind of integrate into here would be the worst thing. So the learnings we've had from a very good partner of ours. I mean, I must say, you know, they're unbelievable in terms of how much they want to invest with you when they are invested with you, and the way they let you do things. You know, they just let you get on with it, but they're always there for advice. You know, they're always, if you need advice, if you need assistance, they're always on call, and they really just let the business. I mean, and I just want to go back to that point. I mean, When we invest, we really look for quality, right? The NASPERS approach, and they've learned that even from the Tencent, and I think from what they've done overseas, they say go Rolls Royce, go, you know. So if you can do it, you know, just better, and then over a period of time maybe turn it down. And I think that's what they've done with Showmax. I mean, they put a lot of effort and time into into a very competitive market, as you probably hear us. How do you stand out against the Netflixes, the other gorillas? Mm-hmm. And they're just saying, you know, you've got to go big. So they've been a great partner, and I think they'll continue to. I mean, it's amazing how, you know, everybody talks about things like Showmax and what it's doing. And we distribute a lot of that content on the Optinet, which is probably been, you know, for me a standout for firstly the competency they've got there. Mm. I mean, they've got content delivery people there that. I mean, we should be the envy. I mean, and they're hiding corners in our environment.
Just run us on Optinet, is it? So that internal NASPERS.
So what we bought from them, that was one of the key assets we bought from them. So the Optinet network and data centers were effectively the ICT arm, if I can call it that, of the NASPERS group, but they ran it as a separate entity.
Right.
So the 32 opcos, Media24, News24, Takealot, MultiChoice, would buy the network and the data center and the content delivery, you know, from Optinet.
Mm.
And when we looked at it started with a Wi-Fi discussion, and we said, well, we actually put up our hand and said, well, why don't we buy that from you, right? And the engineering skill set, the thought leadership we picked up from them was nothing short of amazing. And what we've noticed in terms of the way they've gone about things like Showmax. You know, and it's a bit of a, and again, I'm not allowed to talk numbers and things like that, because that's, you know, you'd have to ask NASPERS for that.
Sure.
But do not be fooled by things and how big things like DStv now, you know, which is a streaming, you know, live, and I think over time they'll enhance that to you know, maybe things like, different billing models around
that.
It is incredible how many DStv users are actually on DStv now as well. You know, obviously you've got to be a certain tier.
Sure.
Incredible the volume growth there. Absolutely incredible. And what is amazing is we've seen that growth in the evenings, which is
right.
So clearly what happens is you go there, but then when you maybe go into your room, you move it from satellite to your Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You know, to your Wi-Fi content or your TCP/IP.
Mm.
You
know. Interesting. So this acquisition, I mean, this is your biggest play in the retail consumer space so far. Does this represent a broader play by IS and perhaps by Dimension Data in the consumer telecommunications market? And I'm thinking specifically from an infrastructure perspective. There's Spectrum supposedly up for grabs, possibly soon, who knows, with the white paper and the ICASA process and all the rest of it. But is this part of a plan to build a more comprehensive retail facing network and perhaps to compete more directly with the incumbent telecommunications operators?
Yeah. So I mean, a very good question, Duncan. And first and foremost, again, I think I just want to go up because it's very important for us. I mean, that whole philosophy that the founders always had, and it's true, but we really do believe in it,
okay,
is that we believe the, you know, we've got, you know, the heart of ICE is technical people that really love this technology.
Yeah.
You know, they love TCP/IP, they love what the internet represents and so forth. And with that, you have to make big investments in your infrastructure, in your network. And that goes without saying.
Sure.
So, you know, the more we invest in that infrastructure, and even though we don't own spectrum and we're quite carrier agnostic on the last mile,
yeah,
we invest massive on running that environment. I mean, without sounding too arrogant, if our environment goes down for 10 minutes, I mean, there's a massive impact. It's kind of saying to us, all right, as a shared environment,
yes,
why don't we make sure that quality and what we've done there, mm-hmm, to keep investing in that, we take it to all the segments. Mm-hmm. Let me not lose sight of the fact, though, enterprise is a very, very important, and today it's still 80% of our business,
yeah,
and it's a very, very big chunk and a very, very important chunk. But we want to run that separately. You know, how you engage with CIOs and IT managers, mm-hmm, and where they're taking their business today. And it's a very confusing world for us and them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What's cloud? What's not cloud? Do I build a data center? Do I give it to ICE? What is my security layer? How are you doing, you know, DDoS? I mean, it's a very different discussion to, yeah, a consumer, which is very, and it's a different delivery. But we absolutely believe the consumer is going to become a lot more relevant. Part of it driven, by the way, from the consumerization of IT. As I mentioned, yeah, it's so intuitive right now. Mm. And I think what they're doing, and they're all working, by the way, at home as well, that's a massive responsibility, we actually think. However, as I mentioned earlier, we have always built our business at ICE, even though we provide a lot on the layer 3 and up, and that's the management, the control, the quality. We've always been agnostic on the last mile. So we never rolled out our own copper.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of our own fiber, but we selectively own a lot of our fiber. Wherever we can buy it wholesale, where we believe the quality is good and the pricing is good, we will. So we've got a policy of 15% selectively owning a lot of our own stuff, and we will continue on that journey. We do believe ownership is important, all right? Not initially kind of, you know, and really why? Because you've got to control your input costs, and you've got to control that. I mean, I think you are aware, and we're not embarrassed about it. You know, 18 years ago, the founders, driven by Dave Frankel, and if you remember them, yeah, Ronnie Alon,
yeah,
we, through ISPA at the time, initially we didn't do it through ISPA, but then ISPA came on board, we took the monopoly to court, and we only won that case 5 years ago, you know, where we imposed a $500 million fine, and that was, this country needs separation, mm-hmm, all right? And I'll come back to that when we discuss it later, because it's a very, very important point. We believe in it very, very strongly. And only over the last few years we've seen true wholesale, and I'm going to be careful about that true, because we still monitor that very, very carefully. Because if you don't have true separation and true understanding of what your responsibility is, mm-hmm, you won't get the price and you won't get the quality right. And it's still a tragedy that I still think, no matter what people say, at a per gig and a per meg, we're still too expensive, I think. You know what I mean? And it's driven from the wholesale. A lot of it is driven from the wholesale perspective. So going back to your question around, well, what is your bigger plan in that space? Mm. Firstly, we will control a little bit more of the last mile, because it's more open now through either wholesale or open access.
Yes.
Right? Do we want to own spectrum? You know, we will always look at it,
yeah,
but right now we think, you know, coming fourth into this market is challenging, or fifth, mm-hmm, or sixth,
mm-hmm,
and today, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but I mean even on 3G today, we and 4G, by the way, mm-hmm, we've got 130,000 SIMs out in the marketplace. You know, the old dongle kind of thing.
Yeah.
We service a lot of our enterprise clients through that, but people take that to the home, you know, as well. We are obviously very keen to understand what this ICT, you know, paper does. Will we be taking, is it only data or voice? We've been very fortunate, Duncan, over the last, we backed the right horse.
Mm.
And the right horse was TCP/IP. And as TCP/IP has evolved, all right, and you know, voice now is a packet. It's,
yeah,
not a, you know what I mean? So, you know, is it GSM or is it, you know? And we very, you know, and we say this, you know, very fondly today. You know, we started this business, we the founders started this business, you know, 23 years ago, and their whole mantra was TCP/IP and data. it was really what I focused on. And we were an ISP, you know. After 2000, ISP was a bit of a swear word. I mean, it was quite embarrassed to say, well, where do you work? What do you do? We're an ISP. Mm. You know, you're not an MNO, you're not a, you know.
Why is that?
I think there was a stigma at some stage attached to, you know, being an ISP. Okay. You know, it was quite an interesting thing. Yeah. We wanted to become a managed network provider and things like that. Mm. And, you know, you kind of fast forward to today and you ask any of the MNOs, you know, where's your strategy, where are you going? They don't use the word ISP, but they will say we're a broadband network provider now. Mm-hmm. It's all data, mm-hmm. and it's all TCP/IP. Yeah. LTEs, I mean, it's a derivative of TCP/IP. That's sure. all it really is. So we're very excited, but also threatened by the fact that everybody's coming to the data world.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, take something like WhatsApp calling. We'll be in voice. We are in voice. Mm-hmm. You know, we do, you know, billions of minutes, you know, today through our VoIP platform, mm-hmm. for the enterprise business. So we'll be doing voice, yeah, but we have to do voice differently, you know. Now, is the quality there, you know, just yet? Mm. No, is it going to get there? Absolutely, you know, because it will get there, either through licensed or to a degree sometimes through unlicensed, you know what I mean? Mm. If you look at the standards on Wi-Fi and what's happening in that space, I mean, you'll be blown over by where it's going. So we're very excited. Will Wi-Fi overtake LTE? Absolutely not. Will it be in parallel? 100%, you know, in terms of the way they move. And again, I think we've got a responsibility because... you know, the way voice and communication will be fun. I mean, all people want to do, okay, I mean, we know that. We want to talk to their loved ones. They want to talk to their community. They want to talk to them. And if you can do that at the lowest cost with still giving quality, because you can't be, you know, you can't be reckless in the marketplace around, you know, they're not paying, so give it, you know, it does, you know, it's got to, people want quality and they will go for quality.
Just talking about mobile and spectrum, the Internet Service Providers Association, of which Internet Solutions is a member, has called on ICASA, or called on the mobile industry to open up their networks for wholesale access, in the same way perhaps that Telkom has done through OpenServe and you know, made its fixed line network available to multiple ISPs, which can then provide services to consumers on top of that. If that were to happen, and the mobile networks were to open up on a wholesale basis like that, is that something you'd welcome, first of all? And secondly, how would that transform the industry, and what would it do for Internet Solutions?
Are we talking part RCT paper here?
We're kind of moving in that direction, yeah. I want to get your general views on the white paper now.
I think you know, it's a very interesting discussion, mm-hmm. Duncan, and depending on which hat you put on, mm-hmm. you know, you might have a different answer. I mean, what we try and do, and it's not cliched, and it's not a marketing. We fundamentally believe that there's a massive responsibility we've got as an ISP. Let me call it that. And as kind of part one of the founders or the early entities that created where the internet in South Africa is today. Yeah. 5 years, you know, from a global perspective. But again, at the heart of them, and I want to go back to that philosophy because I think it's very important. And we always ground ourselves back to that because we do have commercial interests. I mean, I don't want to lie to you, right? But whenever we there's a blur, we always come back to what are we trying to do, right? What are we trying to do? And for us, you know, the spirit of the internet must never be broken, all right? And remember, that, I mean, if you go back to the founding of the World Wide Web and what TCP/IP, remember it was a protocol that was given to the universities, all right? Every single development was an RFC. It was an RFC done by techies,
yeah.
right, to keep growing it, you know. VoIP was an RFC, I mean, I'm getting maybe a bit technical here, but it was done by a bunch of mates that collaborated and said, well, why don't we packetize voice? Storage, packetizing storage, you know, in terms of network access storage, was an RFC. It came out and people started embracing it. That philosophy is such an important philosophy, and everybody's lost sight of that. Mm. Yeah, I think the world has lost sight of that, to be honest. Mm. And we need to keep going back to that, and that's how we ground ourselves at IS in terms of saying, we don't really care about regulation. We do care about it, and I'll come back to that.
Sure.
We don't really care about commercial interests, right? What do we care about is making sure that philosophy, and unfortunately, as more and more big business is coming into it, all right, so it's controlled by more and more of a monopolistic and commercial interest, all right? And that's why, unfortunately, things like the dark web have kind of started, you know, kind of because, again, it's a techie community, unfortunately. It's got a very, very bad stigma, and rightfully so, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of weird things happening in that space. But that's what happens when, you know, when regulators and commercial interests. So I think when you hear people saying, you know, this is what we believe in it, you've got to think of where they're working and where they're coming from in terms of what they believe. We always try and ground ourselves to that philosophy because it really is an important philosophy from an ICE perspective, because it'll lose its way over a period of time. And remember, at that time, we were fighting something else. Mm-hmm. You know, say that this community, it was fighting something called the OSI stack. It was IBM, True Blue, regulated, monopolistic, and wheel control, you know, how messaging works. Mm-hmm. It died, and it'll always die. Because, and that's why, you know, things like the dark web come, because that spirit, in terms of what the internet represents, all right, and if you look at some of the bodies and people that are representing these bodies, I shudder when I see, when I see that, because there's a commercial interest, even though the language is, we want internet to be available to everyone. Mm. You're saying, well, what are we actually speaking with? And it's such an important point from our perspective. So when we see now, and unfortunately it's happened, is that internet's, we've already spoken about it, the mobile operators are very regulated, very monopolistic, are now offering internet access. And that started, 5-6 years ago, 10 years ago, in terms of what, they are a broadband provider.
Yes.
That damage was done, all right, 15 years ago when those first licenses were given. So you've got to look at it in the spirit of what was done then in terms of what's happening now. Mm. Because, that responsibility they had in terms of saying, here's your license, irrespective of how much you pay for it, all right, you've got a big responsibility to make sure that's, that's true. Mm. You need a very strong regulator, all right? You need very strong parliament and government to be able to support that responsibility that you're given a license. Remember, the internet access, the internet protocol, doesn't have a license. It doesn't have anyone controlling it, all right? And what you're seeing now is a blur, all right, of people that have got that responsibility, all right, to say, well, we now have to control it and manage it. On the auspices of, we need to control it because there's a lot of bad things happening on it. We need to control it because there's a lot of, there's from a media perspective, we need to control what's going on, all for the wrong reasons, all right? And again, I go back to, so when I see the ICT paper, there's certain things that we love about it, but the way they're going about it, I'm shuddering and we're squealing and we're a bit cautious around what the actual motives are of actually rolling this out. All right, so do I want and do we believe that that seven entities should be digging up the road, all right, in my neighborhood? Absolutely not, all right? But if you begin that license and that responsibility to do that, all right, make sure you do that with that responsibility and license that you've actually got, all right? And that's where the blur and the regulatory environment has got to be there. The minute that's abused, and remember, I think there's been a lot of abuse in the mobile space over so many years for commercial interests, because it's I've got this license, I'm going to hide behind it for as long as I go. So why are we represented through ISPA, and why are the other entities represented by 40 lawyers? I mean, you got to, that's just the starting point of understanding where this thing might go and land up, all right? And I think there's agendas everywhere that have been played out in the market, all right, with some very interesting messaging. I would always call it all fake news. Read the headline, but what is the real intent, and what are they trying to do? And that's the part that we feel very very strongly. And I think you need a very strong regulator,
which
part of it is, I think, has got some strength, but part of it is being guarded, maybe misguarded by what's happening. But as I said, I think a lot of the damage was done many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, I think it was, the damage was done then. All right, even though you're trying to unravel it now, so you've got to be careful when you're rolling out a new one now. Mm-hmm. The damage, because although your thought is you're trying to undo the damage, I think you're doubling up on the damage. All right, in components of it. Right, and it's a massive responsibility that I think, the people that will run that. Right. And for us, we go back to that calling card of ours. Is the internet owned and controlled? All right. Remember, when you control licensing spectrum, and internet is through that, you're already breaking a lot of that environment. Okay. You've got massive responsibility. We don't have all the answers, Duncan. All right. But what we're saying is there's components of it. All right. And I can drill down into the components. Maybe now this is not the forum of what we love about it. Mm-hmm. And there's components that we think is actually despicable. All right. In terms of the way and the conduct of some of these entities, in terms of what they're trying to do and roll out. And if anything, their messaging is, we're trying to build and roll out. What they're doing is building more barriers, and what they're doing is creating more chaos. in our particular environment, right? And I don't think we've got the strength in the regulator, if that's the intent, to manage that. I really don't. So we're concerned about it. We think it's not as simple as a lot of people play out, and we think that we haven't seen that anywhere in the aspect. Where does, you know, because this is regulating one thing and one thing only. It's the internet. It's not spectrum. It's not fiber. Because everything of that is delivering the internet. It's not delivering anything else. It's about streaming. It's delivering the internet. And nowhere is saying the internet body has to be above that. All right? And the internet spirit has to be almost above that before you start talking about those things. So people are talking about spectrum, but nobody's thinking around what is the philosophy of the internet. And what is it doing on this thing? And I think there's a lot of question marks we've got on that thing, Duncan. And I'm part encouraged, but I'm you know, there's a 50% of me that feels it's as I said, it's not going about it in the right way.
Apart from the spectrum issue, though, and the fact that the white paper suggests or says that that all future mobile spectrum will be allocated to this wholesale open access network, there is the issue of this wholesale open access network, or WOAN, as it stands. What is your view of the WOAN as a principle? Does it make sense, or are we trying something here that no one else in the world has tried?
Well, I think nobody's thought about it. Okay, so let me just go.
Sure.
I think WOAN is the best idea I've heard done 15 years ago.
Okay.
All right. Retrospective today, the question I've got is, how do you undo? It's not as simple as saying, well, anything in the past stays, and anything now is new. It's one. You know what I mean? And I don't know how that separation is actually created. And I think that separation will create more barriers, possibly more monopolies, all right, and not a well-thought-out view of how it's created. And I think the people and the entities that are saying WOAN is great have got interests that weren't aligned to the way it was done 15 years ago.
Right.
All right, saying, oh, well, let me take now what I can to create something, you know, something different. I think our personal view is saying, we've got what we've got, all right? How do we make that better? How do we make what Vodacom's got, what MTN's got, what Celsius's got, what WS got, and make that better? Not cripple it.
Right.
Because I think that's what they'll do.
Yes.
They'll cripple it, right? Or create a very, very thin or blurry that lawyers will have so much fun with. What is past, what is history, and things like that. So, you know, and I know it's quite a controversial view. The message sounds positive. Wow, won't we? You know, we all participate. It's at the lowest cost.
Right.
How do you actually go about doing that? How do you undo the damage that was done so many years? You know, by creating something that's not well thought out, you know, in our view. So the principle is a sound principle. But that principle, you know, should have been done years ago. But economically, this is again, at that stage, it was an economic interest of like saying, let's make a lot of money out of a big license. And once those guys got it, it was, how do I protect myself?
Happened all over the world, right?
And that at the time, the internet wasn't there. It was about voice minutes, and that was a 70-year history in terms of what it just came in a different form. And I don't think people knew how big it was going to be. I mean, if you ask Vodacom, they never thought of it. But what they did, once they got a license, you know, you ask Vodacom, ask MTN, they'll kind of hide behind this in a little way. You know, once they got their license, who's the first person that, that Alan or Craig hired? You know, a lot of people say, oh, the network guys. You know, it was a legal department because they needed to protect their license. You know what I mean? And maybe it's a little bit unfair, but, you know, they hire the best in terms of what it is. You know, maybe rightfully so.
So the ISPA proposal of these guys wholesaling access to their network on equitable terms, like Telkom does through OpenServe, is that the best approach to opening up this market and making it more competitive, and perhaps giving smaller players like internet service providers access to spectrum?
Yeah, look. We are part of ISPA. I mean, I think, as I said, the open access wholesale model. So let's just take that. In a well regulated environment, well thought out, absolutely is the right play.
Okay.
We don't believe necessary. All right. That it should be one entity.
Right.
All right. We believe there's room because you know there's got to be honesty at different levels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you know if you at the different levels you need a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And maybe quite a few of them in terms of that. But then they've got to understand what that retail and wholesale separation is. And I'm not saying that
the existing MNOs should
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Okay. And that's my view. Okay. What I'm saying. I mean, in terms of, you know, my, you know, I don't know if you can bundle it and throw it all together in one.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of in terms of
whether that's desirable.
Well, that's desirable. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's more problems in that environment. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can it be done? It probably can, but with such a strong regulator. So, I mean, when I say strong, with no lobbying, and I call it that, right? No, you know what I mean? You need a very strong, and with someone, all right, up, you know, who's saying, what are we trying to do here? And I'm saying, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to get connectivity, both data and voice, to everyone, the lowest point, in an open, sure, there needs to be elements of kind of regulation in terms of all the bad stuff that can happen there. That's our intention, all right? Because if we get that right, we believe the economy will thrive.
Yes.
And I think that's there are statements out there, but break it down in terms of where they're coming from and who they're said by, and it's not really there.
Mm.
It's not really there. Mm. You know. And as I said, Duncan, let me know. We've also got commercial interests.
Sure.
We really do. All right. But our commercial interest is the more people are connected, the more hopefully money we'll make. You know, kind of the long run. And not many people are connected in our environment in a fair, and open way. As what the internet protocol was done. That whole philosophy, which is an important one for us.
Saki, thank you for the fascinating discussion.
Pleasure.